This is one that I do quite often when I work with inmates. And it seems to be quite effective. And since we're not actually different from inmates, you can also help us. So if anybody wants to share their thoughts on this, share their experience, or ask questions.
I forget which one it was, which color it was in, but when it was like acts of violence against them, or harm that you caused, it's like I was moving along towards, and then all of a sudden, whoa. I just realized that there were all these things that were literally kind of coming out of me in moments where, just kind of flying back through time and memories and stuff like that. And just, so reflecting all those things. And it was interesting whether or not then, like, to watch all of that, but to try not to kind of judge it. Or there was something about the meditation that allowed me to kind of pass through it, and just without any judgment, good or bad, on those kinds of things. But you had said that, and I was just like, that piece of it sometimes those things, just the traumatic being a part of having caused that kind of harm, that that I know that can be really overbearing for me in the judgment.
I think you brought up several good points there. One is that these things are still in our mind at some level, in an unresolved way. And if we can bring them into consciousness, then there's the chance of really learning to work with them. But when we bring them into consciousness, if we do it in a way where we feel guilty and beat up on ourselves, we aren't really working through the issues, or purifying. But if we can allow them to be there, but without judging ourselves, and just knowing that we have some regrets for having engaged in those actions and caused that level of harm, recognizing it, regretting it, but no judgment, and then letting the light come and really purify, then I think that allows for some very deep healing. And it allows us also to become really compassionate towards others, because we realize that those same instincts exist in us that the inmates have been imprisoned for. And that's what I mean by we're not actually that different. Maybe we grew up in different circumstances, so the seeds of our own violence weren't watered the way they were in the circumstances that many of the inmates grew up in. But we still have those seeds, and maybe they come out in other ways. But they're still there, and they need to be acknowledged and worked with and remedied and let go of and forgiven. And so I think when we can see that in ourselves, it allows for a level of compassion and tolerance that we haven't had before. And when we have that level of compassion and tolerance, that's, I think, what allows prisoners to open up and trust us. Because we're not, we're just being one human being talking to another human being. Reflections.
Whenever I'm doing meditations like that, I'm always struck by how much compassion I can have for myself. I always, like, in the middle of it, I just get so frustrated that can't translate into my life, and I get so caught up in things that I don't stop to have that compassion for myself, and then to allow that to transfer to others, and recognizing that compassion for myself is what gives me the strength. to give to others.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? And that that compassion for ourselves is so important.
And it feels good.
And that's the whole thing. When we practice a spiritual path, it should eventually make us feel good. And I say this because some people think, oh, you're only being compassionate if you're suffering. Yeah, you're only truly altruistic if you suffer. I think that's incorrect. You know, compassion towards ourselves should feel good. And from that space of feeling good, we can be altruistic. And I say this because there's a certain mechanism in our culture that probably works in us, and I think that works in the inmates too, in which we feel, if I hate myself for what I've done, then I'm doing penance for the harm I caused. So the more I feel lousy about myself, the more I feel guilty, the more I'm atoning for harm. No, that doesn't work. Yeah. Guilt and self-hatred do not atone for harm that we've done. I think it's really through this compassion for ourselves, forgiving ourselves and enabling us to be compassionate towards others. That's how we really purify and atone. I think that's really, really crucial because we have all too much tendency in our culture to hate ourselves. And very difficult to be happy and to benefit others when we're busy beating ourselves up. One of the inmates that I corresponded with for quite a long time, he's in for pedophilia, and we've established a level of communication where I can ask him pretty direct questions, not only about what he's done, but what he's observed in other people who are in for sex crimes. And he was telling me about the Magellan program that they do at his prison. He's in Ohio. And how much it's helped him, because he meets with other inmates who are in for sex crimes, and the therapists that are there that facilitate the group are really non-judgmental. And he really emphasized how important that lack of judgment was, because he said already the police, the guards, and myself have been very judgmental towards what I've done. So just going into a non-judgmental space that allowed him to explore how he wound up doing the actions he did was, you know, incredibly helpful for him. Mm-hmm. So being free of the judgment of the system, but also of his own self.
Mm-hmm. Just about the exercise, just going from kind of from the head to the throat, actually the throat to your heart. I think it was something that was particularly effective, I think, for me, was going from what my actions are that maybe I did with my body or my hand, which is very physical, with, you know, the physical of the killing and the. And part of me is like, oh, killing, stealing, I'm fine. Oh, but I have in so many ways, maybe not with my physical hands, but how many cutting remarks, you know, how many things have, you know, just been a little stabbed in a little darkness of one else's spirit, we've said or we thought, and then going from that to maybe from the intentional hands to what I've said, mm-hmm. and then to where I am. This is, that was really. Because I don't think I could have gone straight into my blue light without going through the other two.
Yeah.
Was there something about the colors, white, red, and blue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they each have a different energy, don't mm-hmm. they? The three different colors. Yeah. Yeah. And then specifically reflecting on, I mean, because physical actions are the grossest, so starting with them, then verbal, then mental, emotional. So progressively going in different colors. And then seeing how they're related. And then as we deal more with it, actually, we may see, well, okay, I may not have killed a human being with my hand, but I may have rejoiced when other people have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
Or I may have killed animals to eat, or because they were pests. Not like we're killing free, you know? And same with stealing. Okay, I may not have broken into somebody's house, but I cheat on my taxes. I sneak into the theater without buying a ticket. And then the whole one of sexual behavior. I mean, really, kind of trying to be, to do some kind of review of how we use our sexuality and if it's been wisely and kindly. And so slowly, you know, reflecting on these different actions and using that outline as a way to get to know ourselves, to do kind of a life review, and to clean up what we've done and said and thought in our life so that we can start fresh each day. Mm-hmm. And act from a kind heart each day instead of carrying around a sack of regrets or a sack of guilt.
Mm-hmm. You know, listening and I'm trying to take it in, but there's part of me that's like, you know, there's a real limitation, so I'm just having to kind of like, okay, how much of this is her religious
stuff?
I'm like, which way is it off? But yeah, it's
called
resistance. Yeah.
I appreciate your honesty.
Well,
We all go through this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yeah? When we're asked to do self-reflection, there's one part of ourself that goes, I don't know. This is something I'll do with the inmates, but I don't really need to do it for myself. Oh, yeah. I've been through that, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's something very freeing about learning to be honest with ourselves. And I think that's one of the things that I see is so beautiful with some of the inmates that I work with. Is sometimes they have a much greater ability to be honest with themselves than people on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I'm not saying all the inmates, I'm not saying all the people on the outside, but some of the inmates have worked with incredible level of self-honesty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I respect it tremendously. There are things that people on the outside would you know, forget about saying to somebody else. We don't want to acknowledge it to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, that's how you can really see the healing that goes on with some of the guys. And how they bring forth their own ability to be a benefit through having healed in this way. Because I think they have a lot of wisdom there from life experience. There's one guy I work with. I'm telling Susie actually several that I work with that I want to write, but one in particular because I think he has a level of wisdom that's just remarkable. That he has one form of honesty that's really, really beautiful and an ability to articulate it that I think can be so beneficial to especially at youth risk. Kind of edge him towards, you know, because when one does this whole thing of self-honesty, then, you know, have so much ability to really benefit others comes from that. And I think I found at least in the prison work I do, you probably have too, that when the inmates can get in touch with their own compassion and their own feeling that yes, I have something inside that can benefit the world, that's when they really turn around and, light comes in. Mm-hmm. So I think we all feel like we have something to give, we have something to offer.
Question about one prayer of meditation. When we're, I think one word, and that's because probably some Christian I just hang up on often, but purification.
Mm.
One of the things, like when we're purifying something, sorry, this is going off on a little bit of tangent, but I realize that's just, it's still going through my head from just now. When we purify it, I think I'm looking at that word, and it's a very loaded word, especially for people. And I'm wondering if you could speak on that a little bit. I mean, because my version of purification is probably, I realize you might, when I'm starting a purifying my life, I was having a big problem, just the resistance, and but then again, because my idea of purification just didn't work. And I found myself through the rest of the time trying to find something that worked for me. And I'm so...
Okay, what does the word purification bring up for you?
I realize, I try to use the it comes to washing.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just got too hung up on the actual word itself in the beginning. And then I started with washing. And then I was thinking, well, is it the erasure? Is it simply the washing? Like, this is, there's a lot. There's actually just too much going on. There's no detachment going on in my mind.
But in Christian theology, the word it's really loaded. It's really a loaded word.
Self-flagellation, that's what I think.
I don't know if I can articulate it any better, but it comes with a lot of baggage.
I had like a, not forging, but I was like, well, are we washing to erase, or are we washing to clean, and what does clean mean? And so finally, where I got to actually for the last one, I'm like, I'm just pouring water. I'm just pouring water.
Uh-huh.
I can't alter it right now, but maybe if I pour water, it'll work.
Uh-huh.
And by that point, I think I got to a place where I could use that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of resistance until that point.
Okay, just by the word purify.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because of Christian.
Unclean, and unclean, and then the whole purification rites in the Jewish faith, and you need to clean yourself and being unclean.
I find there's a lot to this gender around it too. Women are saying that women do are considered impure and unclean, and some of them even sort of like incapable of ever being purified.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, some of that comes up for me around
What about okay. Does any kind of word, like if we said cleanse, is that easier, or do we need a word? How about self-forgiveness?
I've been thinking that part of the practice for me is unlearning a lot of these associations with the words and giving them new meaning. And even though it's talk about gender, letting go of being offended or letting that resistance go just because it's just a word,
So in a way, you're saying that the word can even be a trigger to help you let go of baggage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the association with the words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. I've had to wrestle with the same things because words do bring up very loaded things and past associations. And to realize sometimes how trapped I am by those past associations. And, you know, I have to let those go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, how much have I internalized ideas of being impure? Or how much have I internalized ideas of original sin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And to bring those into consciousness and not just say, oh, that's what other people believe and I don't like it, but I've internalized some of it. And that's what I really have to let go of, is my own internal wrong conceptions. But it's true, sometimes using other words can be a path into that. Whereas when we use the loaded words, sometimes it's too much for us at the beginning.
I'm hoping you can hear more from you about what purification, like what that means for you.
Yeah, what it means for me, it is a cleansing process in the sense that if I have thought, said, or done things that are harmful, there's a trace of that energy that remains with me. And that trace of that energy needs to be washed away. You know, in the same way as if I pour spaghetti sauce on my clothes, it needs to be laundered, you know, and washed away. It doesn't have anything to do with original sin or being contaminated or inherently defiled. It's more the thing of, through a cause that I created, there's a remnant of energy that I want to let go of. So purification can mean letting go of through forgiving myself. And part of the reason that we do the visualization of projecting the good qualities outward is because sometimes if we start with self-forgiveness, we can't get there because we're always so dependent on others forgiving us. We're dependent on what others think of us. We so often project things outwardly. So here we project the self-forgiveness, the good qualities outward into the ball of light, and then use something external to purify us. Yeah. In the same way that sometimes when we have faults inside, we project them onto somebody else, don't we? So here, you know, we have some good qualities, we're projecting them outside, and that helps us get in touch with them because, you know, they come into us, and then in the end, the whole ball of light comes in and merges into our whole heart, and there's no differentiation. Okay, so it's kind of a psychological process in that way. Because we're not really looking for others to, you know, purify us, because this is all occurring within ourselves. The harm that we did came from our own heart and mind, and so the purification that we do also has to come from our own heart and mind. So that's really, you know, we're using symbolism here to, and, you know, imagery to help us come to that own place inside of really letting go so that we don't carry around guilt or regret or unhappiness or any of these things. That's what purification means to me. So it's actually based on the idea that we are pure inside, okay, and that somehow, you know, the ignorance, anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, that these things have temporarily placed these kind of energy traces on our mind, and they can be removed.
So it's almost like a return to an original state of purity.
Or not necessarily a return, because I don't know that we've ever been there before, but an accessing of the potential for purity that we've never accessed before. Because I think if we were originally pure, there would have been no cause for us to get defiled, you know. So Buddhism just has this idea of beginningless ignorance, but it has an end.
I find it really helpful to think about it as letting go, because what came up for me during the meditation was that, you know, thinking about all those things that I've, you know, thought or said or done in terms of the hostility, was how attached I was to carry all those things around.
Mm-hmm.
And the real resistance to letting them go, because they've become, you know, some sort of thing to cling to in some way. So for me, the idea of letting it go and just dropping those things and leaving them behind is a powerful way to think about it.
Yes, yes. I think that's a... what you said is very important about how we sometimes cling on to our mistakes or our faults and even build a whole identity around them. And we're afraid to give it up because who am I going to be? Yeah.
And I think there's also worry for me that I'll repeat it if I let it go.
Ah.
That keeping it near me is what reminds me not to do that again.
Okay. But then I think we do have to be concerned and not repeat something. But what this gets into is our old ways of learning how not to repeat it is to feel guilty about it. Again, there's that preconception that if I feel guilty, then I won't repeat it. But that's not necessarily true. Yeah. So I think your concern is a very valid concern, and what we're trying to do maybe is undo ways in which we've dealt with that before that haven't worked, and try and introduce some new ways. Because is it true that if you hold on to a negativity that you did and develop an identity around it, does that make you not do that action again? No. Sometimes it draws you back into it.
Or just maybe you just get it in action.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think you're not really able to do, maybe you're not doing an action, you're not able to do positive action.
Yeah, you're immobilized.
Yeah.
I think you can still hold on to it without bad feelings associated with it. I mean, I'm really trying to access through taking what you're saying and trying to, I'm writing Christian views of prison ministry, so I'm really trying to synthesize a lot of this. And I know that a lot of times when a Christian, I said something wrong, someone says to me, well, you're Christian, shouldn't you want to forgive? They say, and I asked a priest this, and they said, of course you forgive. You forgive and you love, but you can't let that action go. You just let all the hatred around it into kind of be redeemed through Christ and our my way of thinking. If that's what you brought up, it's hard to let go of the action and remove the guilt from it and accept the forgiveness. But that's what we're called to do. And I think there's just so much less. I'm interpreting all of this through this weird Christocentric lens here. But it's just, it's so, we're using different words and different terminology, but it's just such a thing that so many people find it difficult.
Yeah. And because there's a difference between remembering a mistake we made and holding it. Yeah, because we might remember, oh boy, you know, I got myself into that situation and I don't want to do that again because I don't want to act that way again. And we remember that. Mm-hmm. But we let go of the self-hatred, the guilt, the self-flagellation, and, you know, allow for the forgiveness. Or whatever language you want to put it in, redemption or salvation or... whatever it is, yeah.
More than it is.
Yeah.